We're holding on Mem Omid Bey's four lines from the bottom. We learned yesterday, we were starting to discuss the case where an animal is used for bullfights or things like that, and therefore, and then it kills a person, where it was said in the Mishnah, it's not Chayav Misa, because the Pasuk says, Ki Yigach, when the animal gores on its own, not Yagichuhu, not they make it gore. So we started discussing the question. Nevertheless, if such an animal kills a person, is it still kosher for a korban? Given that an animal that killed is posel for a korban, is this maybe an exception to the rule for the same reason, because it was an onus? So we had a machlokas, Rav and Shmuel about that, where Rav says that Rav says it's kosher and Shmuel says it's posel. So in that connection, we brought a brisa where it was talking about the comparison and contrast between Reveya and Negea. We have two cases in which an animal is possible for a carbon. Among the various cases in which an animal is possible for a carbon is one if it was Reveya Venirba, if it was used for bestiality, and another one if it was Negea, if it gored and killed a person. So in the Braisa, it pointed out there is a difference between those, in that Rav Shimon had pointed out that that Reveya, there's no difference between onus and rotzen, whereas negeach, there is a difference, which we said on the face of it, that supports Shmuel's position. If we say that that means as far as fitness for a korban, we said that no, the braisa may mean as far as whether the animal is given skill or not. On the other hand, the braisa had said that negeach, if an animal gores and kills when the animal is moored, then the owner pays kofer, which we're going to talk about more today in the Gemara, whereas by Reveya, you don't pay kofer. So therefore, each one has unique features of its own, and therefore we need two different miyotim in the pasuk that couldn't have given one miyot, and we learn the other one from. So now, the Gemara says, Omamar, so we said in the Braisa, Negeach Meshalom is a kofer, Reveya Eina Meshalom is a kofer. We said an animal that gores, you pay kofer once the animal is a moored. We're going to discuss, we discussed earlier in the Masechta, the opinion of Rav Yossi that says that, that you pay chatzi kofer, that you pay half kofer if the animal is a tam, but, the majority opinion is not like that. But anyway, if the animal is moored, then you definitely pay kofer. Maybe I said really, actually, whatever. Anyway, on the other hand, we said, Reveya, you're not paying kofer. Well, paying kofer implies that there was some kind of death over here, because that's what kofer is. So the Gemara says, Hechidomi, what exactly is the scenario? Ilema de rov of a kotla, do you mean that the animal committed bestiality, that the animal was used for bestiality with a person, and that caused the person to die? So the animal, for example, was the male and was the active one, and then a woman was involved with it and got killed in the process. Well, you have to ask, then why shouldn't there be kofer? Mali kotla b'kayna, mali kotla b'revia. On the face of it, what's the difference between whether the animal killed with its horn or by having relations with the woman? Where obviously we'd have to be talking about where it did it multiple times, where it's moored for this kind of behavior, but whatever, the point is, a killing is a killing. So why shouldn't there be a kofer? Be'ela de rov of lekotla, if you're gonna say that it committed, that the bestiality was done, but it didn't kill the woman, well, of course, hay de lemshalim kofer, mishum de lekotlahu, the fact that it's not paying kofer is because there was no killing. So how can Rav Shimon be saying in the Braisa that shows that there's a chumrah in goring over Reveya? It's not a chumrah. It's the fact is, by Reveya, unless there was a death involved, there's no kofer to talk about. So what's the case? Omer Abaya, Abaya says, La'olam derav of lekotla. We are, in fact, talking about where there wasn't a killing involved. What happened was, Dasyur le'beis din v'katlua. But let's say that there were Edim v'asra, and the woman herself was brought to Beis Din and executed, because that's what the Torah says, that if a man or a woman commits bestiality with an animal, the animal is given skila, but the person is also executed. So in that case, Maudatema, so you would think, in that case, now that you have that the woman was killed as well, Kimanda Kopla Dummy, we should consider it as though the shur caused the woman's death. It's more indirect, of course, because it didn't cause her death directly. It's rather that she was executed by Beis Din, and therefore, and then and therefore, but nevertheless, we still maybe say the Shur, because the Shur was involved, therefore maybe we should say not only is the Shur getting skila, as it says in the Pasuk, but maybe the owner should also have to pay koper for that. Which Tosfos brings the question. I mean, on the face of it, the animal was the woman was the bas das. She's the one who initiated the whole thing in the first place. Why would we even think that the owner of the animal is chayav? It should be exactly like the case of shur hatzadin. The same way as by an ox, the same way as by a bull used in bullfights, people are goading it to gore. The same way she goaded it to commit bestiality with her. So of course there's no koper. So Tosfos says, okay, you could have, for example, that the Shur was the one that initiated it, but she decided to go ahead with it. So that would be considered. So it's not that the Shur was provoked into doing it. The Shur did it on its own. But she could have easily gotten away, and instead she chose to go through with it. So it's berotzen for her. So she can get executed, but it was also berotzen for the shur, and therefore it would be chayiv misa, and therefore we would think that there's a koifer, and therefore kamash malon, therefore the Shimon has to tell us in the braisa that it's not so. Rava Amar, Rava says a different answer. La'olam de Rava v'kapla. Actually, we could be talking about that. That she died in the act. Now you're wondering then in that case, what's the difference of whether the animal used its horns or its aver to kill? Either way, it's a killing. You can say there's a big difference, and that's why Reb Shimon has to highlight the difference. Keren, and that's why in fact there is no koifer. Keren kavanasi lahazik, hay kavanasi lahanos atzmehu. Because when it comes to keren, as we've been discussing since the beginning of the Masechta, the definition of keren is where the animal intends to cause damage. The definition of keren, we've always said, is the animal intends to cause damage, and it doesn't necessarily have a hanav. Hi, kavanos el hanos atzmehu. Here, basically, the animal has in mind for its own hanav, so therefore, it would be more like shein or more like reg. Tosfos points out, now we did have back in the second parak, we had a question in the Gemara, kishkisha ba'amasa, what happens, we said, if the animal was wagging its male organ and caused damage, we wondered whether that's considered keren because it's a shinui or whether it's considered rego, because it waggled that aver and it broke something or whatever. But the difference is, Tosfos points out that here we're talking about something, in a sense, very normal for the animal to do, to mate, not with a person, obviously, but still, there we're talking about where it was doing an unusual thing, waggling it around, where here we're talking about a more normal thing, so therefore it really would be like Shane or like Regal. In which case, so by my plea, so what would be the what would be the underlying argument between Rava and Abaya of how to understand the Braisa, where again Abaya is saying we're talking about that the woman did not die as a result of the Revia, but she was executed afterwards by Destin, and the Chiddush is that the owner doesn't pay the koifer. And according to Rava, we're talking about she was killed in it, but Rava is saying that this is not an example of Keren, this would be an example of Shane or Red. So, by my plea, what is a case where there would be a difference between their understandings, and why is Abaya not understanding like Rava? Wouldn't it be more straightforward to understand like Rava that we're talking about that she was killed in it, rather than Abaya having to say that it's talking about where she was killed as a side thing by Gestin? So Beregel should dorsa gabitinik b'chatzaranizim. The naftamina would be, and the difference would be when you have the animal was walking around in the chotzer of the nizek and it stepped on a baby and killed it, which is a case that we learned about back in the second parak. La baya mishalim koifer, the rova lo mishalim koifer. So according to Abaya's way of understanding the braisa, there will be koifer. The animal didn't mean to cause hezek. Doesn't matter. You don't need an intention to cause hezek in order to pay koifer. As long as a person was killed directly by the animal, then yes. So Abaya is saying, you know what? In this case over here of Revia, why is the owner of the animal potter from Koifer? Only because the woman wasn't killed in the act, but only afterwards by Beis Din. Had she been killed in the act by the animal, then yes, the owner would be paying a Koifer. So by the same token, if the animal does regal, where regal is always muad, so therefore, and if the animal is walking around normally and steps on a baby and kills it, Rahman al-Tlan, then yes, the owner would be paying koifer. the Rava, learn the Shalom Kofa, whereas according to Rava's understanding of the Braise, he wouldn't, because Rava is saying that even when the woman was killed in the act, then there was no Kofa, and so by the same token, over here, by Regal, there wouldn't be. Tosfos points out a couple of things in this. First of all, really, according to Rava, who was saying that the difference is that here the animal intends hanos atzmai, then really the better comparison is not so much with regal, but rather with shein, because shein, by definition, means that the animal is having hanah. However, the machloikas between Abaya and Rava was presented in connection with regal back in the second parak, and therefore the Gemara uses that example over here, even though it could instead have used an example with Shane. With Shane, Marsha points out, by the way, it would have to be, if we wanted to say Shane, we would have to say it was talking about a wild animal, whereas we learned back on Daf Tes Zayin, it would be fairly normal for it to eat small children, because after all, these animals are carnivores. Anyway, Tosfos also points out that now, usually in a Machlokas, Abaya and Rava, of course, the Halacha is like Rava, except in six cases. Here, though, it's not Abaya and Rava are not really arguing about their own svaras of what should be the halacha in this case. It's more they're arguing about what does the braisa mean over here. What do we extract from the braisa that we're saying over here? And therefore, this is one of those cases where the halacha is, in fact, like Abaya, because they're not really arguing about their own independent machlokas. So yes, in that case, with regal over here, you would pay kofer. So therefore, by the same token over here with the revia, yes, if the woman had been killed in the act, then there would be kofer. Only when she's not, only when she's being executed later by Beis Din, is there not. Okay, so the Gemara finishes off. Tanya Kavasei the Rab, we learn a braisa like Rab says, as far as the question, again, whether an ox, whether a bull that was used for bullfighting is can be brought as a korban. The braisa says, show her it's done, ain't chayiv nisa. It's not chayiv nisa, because as we said in the Mishnah, it was forced into it. The kosher, the gabim is there. It is in fact kosher to bring as a korban, because it's considered like it was forced, and therefore the miut of doesn't apply. That would only apply when the animal gored voluntarily, and here it was forced into it. So it would in fact be kosher as a korban. Worth mentioning in this connection, a story that's told in the Sefer Shevet Yehuda that tells the story of back when there were large Jewish communities in Spain. That one time there was a particular town where they had they were going to be holding one of their bullfights, as they often do in Spain. A Yid living in that town had a dream the night before it that his father was actually misgalgal in that bull that's supposed to be used for the bullfight, and therefore he's pleading with his son to do something about it to save his neshama. The upshot is the son had to hatch a whole complicated plan to get the bull away from its handlers and shecht it rather than having to go through the bullfight being killed in the bull ring, as it often is, and the meat given out to poor Tamar Chachamim and other poor people, and that way he was able to be misaken in his father's neshama. So I suppose in the same sense over here, you could conceivably have an animal that was used for bullfighting, and now instead it gets taken and used as a korban. Conceivably, maybe there could be some yid's neshama trapped in there in a gilgul, where now you're finally able to elevate it. Okay. Mishnah says, Shur shenogach ha'sa'odam u'mes. If a shur gored a person and the person was killed, muad mishalim kofer, v'tam potam and ha'kofer. So if the animal is muad, then you're paying kofer. If the animal is a tam, then you're not paying kofer. Now our Mishnah again is telling us not like the opinion that says that you would pay chatzi kofer for a tam. So our Mishnah is saying not like that. Either way, the animal is chayiv misa, which it says in the Torah that when there's sokol yisokol asher, the pasuk says the sher is given skila. So Mefarshim talk about what exactly is the chiddush of our Mishnah, because so far the dinim that we said in the Mishnah seem to be pretty clearly stated in the pasuk. But so one point is the Cheshek Shloima points out you could have a case where the animal is not going to get skila, but still you're still for various reasons, nevertheless kofa would still apply. So uh, And then also the point is, again, you do have an opinion that we're going to learn on Omid Beis that says that you pay Chatzi Kofer, and the Chiddush about this is, so therefore the Mishnah is telling us that not. The Chiddush as far as Skila is that maybe you would think, since the Pasuk phrases it, Im Kofer Yushasolav, if a Kofer is imposed on the owner of the Shur, so you would think it means it's up to Beis Din's discretion. They can decide that the Shur should get Skila or that the owner should pay Kofer. And therefore, the Mishnah is telling us that no matter what the animal is getting skila, as long as there were Eidim Vasra, and as long as the animal meant to cause the damage, as far as Kofer, it's going to depend time or more. The Mishnah continues, V'chein b'bein, v'chein b'bas. Same thing applies if the Shur gored a boy or a girl, below bar bas mitzvah, and killed them. Same thing. The Shur is going to be Chayiv Misa. We're going to learn later on Daf Mem Daled, the Gemara is going to point out what the Chiddush is. Now that also it says in the Pasuk, Oy Vein Yigach, Oy Vas Yigach, Kamishpat Azeh Yo'osu Loi. The Gemara is going to point out later on Daf Mem Daled what the Chiddush of that is. Why would we think the penalty should be any different if it was a child rather than it was an adult? We'll learn on Daf Mem Daled why that is. And again, what the Chiddush of the Mishnah is over here is because it applies to a Tam as well. There is a very interesting thing, by the way, if you look in the old Hertz Chumash, he brings a very interesting point of a reason why the Torah might have to stress that point. Now, again, later on in Daf Mem Daled, the Gemara is going to bring a halachic reason for it, given that a boy or a girl are not yet chayiv mitzvahs, you wouldn't realize that the same dinim apply, and therefore the pasuk has to tell us yes. But Hertz brings in this Chumash a very interesting point. They found in an archaeological dig, they found the famous code of Hammurabi, a king in Babel, in the times of the Ovis, approximately. Some say that Hammurabi is the same as Amraphel from the Torah, whatever it is. Anyway, he published his code of laws on a large monument, and eventually they dug it up. They dug it up in the ruins over there about 150 or so years ago. Anyway. So he has in his laws over there something like this. Person builds a house, and then the house collapses and kills the person living in the house. So then the builder is executed, is put to death for being negligent. Then the Hammurabi continues, when the building collapses, it kills a child of the one living there, then you take a child of the builder and you execute them for it. So literally this kind of thing goes, this law code literally goes for eye for an eye kind of thing. Not like we're going to learn later in the Masechta that when the Torah says ayin tachas ayin, it doesn't mean you gouge out the one person's eye for gouging out the other. It means you make them pay money, but these laws of Hammurabi are not like that. They literally have that you put out the eye and so forth. So here you have, they literally say you kill the child of the builder for their father's negligence. So therefore, Sehert says in his Chumash, so now the Torah is coming to negate that kind of thing. No, there's no such thing that you execute a child for what their parent did. Whether the ox killed a boy or a girl, either way, you do exactly as you would do. If it killed an adult, you have the owner is paying chatzi nezek or nezek shalom and kofer and so on, and having his ox given skila and so forth, but not that you involve his children in any way. Anyway, getting back to the Mishnah, nogach eved oma, if the ox gores an eved knani or an oma or shivcha knanis, noisin shloshim sloim, then you, the animal does get skila, but as far as the payment, instead of koifer, what you have is you pay the owner 30 sloim, venture yofa meyamano, venchani yofa the jinnu echa. And that applies whether the shur is worth 100, whether the eved is worth 100 mana, in which case 30 sloim is very little compared to that. Or whether he's worth only one dinar, a dinar being a quarter of a sela, then either way the Torah fixes a value of 30 sloim. This is one of the typical examples of knas in the Torah, where knas is where you're paying either more or less than the actual damage or fixed value, and this is an example of one of those fixed values. Okay. So the Gemara starts off. V'chimei achet mitam kaflin in lei. Given that the animal is supposed to get skila when it was already a tam, the first time it gores and kills a person, it's already chayiv misa. Mu'ad heichim ashkachasla. Well then, how do you ever have a case where the animal is going to become mu'ad in the first place? So the Gemara says, Amar Rava, hach ma'eskinen, v'vencha amdu l'shloish b'nei Adam. Say, for example, the animal had chased after three different people. So it chased after somebody, but the person managed to get away in time. And the same thing, a second, the same thing, and a third. Each time, the Adam evaluates, and based in after interrogating them, agrees that each time, if it would have gotten the person, it would have killed him, except the person managed to evade them. So therefore, so now the animal already can be considered a muad, says Rabba. So now, the fourth time, if it actually catches the person and kills him, then we can consider it a muad. Rav Ashi said, no, done a lot of to say like that, that you can evaluate on the basis of that it would have killed the person if it had gotten to him. No, that doesn't really count for anything. No, you have to have a different case. Suppose that it made three people dangerously sick. So it attacked Reuven, but it did, and gored him. It didn't kill him yet, but now Reuven is deathly ill. The same thing Shimon, the same thing Levi. Now, by the time it comes to now this animal gores Yehuda, and each time the owner has been warned in Beis Din about what happened. So now what happens is now Reuven, Shimon, and Levi all die, and therefore so now we can say that the goring of Yehuda now already this ox is a mord. So that would be a case. So it did gore. So this is already the fourth time it gored, and every time there were Adim and so forth. But the difference is that the first three people didn't die yet until shortly before the fourth goring took place. So now they haven't had a chance to give skilla to the animal yet, and then went and gored a fourth time. Rav Zvid gives a different answer. For example, you can have that the animal killed, that this particular ox killed three animals, and now it killed a person, so it killed three animals, and therefore now it can be considered a muad. But the Gemara asks, "Muad l'behema, have a muad l'adam?" So you're telling me if the animal is muad to kill animals, then it's automatically muad for people. It shouldn't be, as we learned at the beginning of the Masechta. Adam islay mazla. A person has mazla, which we discussed over there. What that means? It means that a person has more das to be able to guard themselves against being gored. It means a person has a neshama. And has a malach looking out for him in Shemayim that therefore makes it less likely that he's going to be killed, etc. So whereas an animal doesn't. So you could very well have that an animal was killed, or that animals were killed over there because they don't have mazla, but people do, and therefore it's harder to. You can't automatically say that because an animal is moored to kill other animals, therefore automatically it's moored to kill people. In fact, we learned a few days ago, we learned a discussion about, we had a mission over there about a shur that's moored l'minoy and not moored l'sha'ene minoy. And we said, Rav Zvid said that ve'ene moored t'nan, that the Mishnah means over there that you have a case where an ox is moored for its min, and we know for a fact it's not moored for its other min, meaning by default, we assume if it's moored for one min, it's moored for all of them. And Tosfos discusses over there that maybe Rav Zvid changed his mind based on that because he was saying that Rav Zvid himself is saying that he was saying that Rav Zvid is saying that that once it's moored for animals, it's automatically moored for people. But on the other hand, Tosfos says over there that maybe actually we can say that Rav Zvid may have changed his mind based on what he says over here, because the fact is what he's saying over here is contradicted by what we learned at the beginning of the Masechta, that a person has mazla and an animal doesn't, and therefore that if it's moored to kill animals, it's not necessarily moored to kill people. Anyway, but here Rav Zvid is saying maybe that point. But the Gemara is asking, on that a moored la behema, have a moored la adam. You can be talking about where the animal so far has killed three goyim. The concept that you would give skila to the animal does not necessarily apply in that case, because the dinim of the Torah, as usual, are written to apply between Jews. There is actually, in connection with what we learned the other day about the different dinim in these regards between Jews and Goyim, where we said over there that the Goyish legal systems often do have different rules for these things anyway, and therefore that makes a difference. Here, actually, the Evan Ozel points out that conceivably, if you have a Goyish legal system where, a person's animal kills somebody, then that animal is put to death, conceivably, under such a legal system, yes, you would have to say, maybe because on the grounds of dina de machosa dina, that the animal should be executed. But here we're talking about where the Goyish legal system doesn't have that concept. So if it killed Goyim, then that's not a reason to give it skila, but nevertheless, it is mourned for people. And now, the fourth time, the person it gored was a yid, and therefore that's another example that we could have how it becomes a mourn without having already been executed as a tam. But the Gemara asks, is it necessarily the case that an animal that's moored to kill Goyim is automatically moored to kill Jews? After all, this point that we said about mazla applies differently to Goyim than to Jews. A Jew has a different kind of mazla. Although we say actually in Shabbos, ein mazla l'Yisrael, which we explain in Chassidus means ayin, means something that's beyond even Seder Shtalshalos, is the mazla of the Jewish people. Whatever, the point is that you also have the famous idea that it says in the Masechta Shabbos that an animal doesn't attack a person unless that person appears to it like another animal. So therefore, you can say that a yid is on a different level. So just because an animal is moored to gore goyim doesn't necessarily mean that it's moored to gore Jews. Rav Shimon Lakish says, here is a different example. Good Shaharak Shlosh Me'adam Trefa. You could have a case where the three people that it killed were all trefus. They all had some kind of injury that would make it, that had such a thing happen in an animal, they would die within 12 months. They had this before this animal ever gored them. Now it gored them, 1, 2, 3, and killed them. It is moored to gore people. But on the other hand, you can't give misas basedin to the ox, for goring such people, the same way as if a person kills such a person, then he's not chayiv misa. The same way the ox kills such a person, then he's not chayiv misa for it. So therefore you have that it did that three times, it became a muad, and now the fourth time it gores a healthy person. But the Gemara says, still, does that work? A muad l'treif, a muad l'shalim. Is an animal that's moored to kill treifus, is it necessarily considered moored to also kill healthy people? On the face of it, the treifus is like on the verge of death anyway. So how does that show that all this time if it had been goring regular people? Again, we have to remember the whole concept that the animal goes from tam to moored. Is we learned earlier in the Masechta that you have two ways of looking at it. Is it Liyaudi Torah? Is it to warn this ox is dangerous, this ox is a killer, or is it Liyaudi Gavra? Is it to warn the owner of the ox? You have a dangerous ox that kills, and therefore you better take better care of it. And we said a nafka minna of it would be if the animal killed multiple times on the same day. Anyway, the point is that yes, if it killed Treifus, but the fact is it's not that hard to kill a Treifus because it's on the verge of death anyway. It's much harder to kill a Shalim. So therefore, not necessarily are we going to say that just because it's moored for Treifus, does that automatically make it moored for healthy people as well? Tosfos, by the way, points out, now the Gemara does not mention in any of these possibilities the case where the animal intended to kill an animal and instead each time it killed a person. In that case, Tosfos says it actually wouldn't be considered moored for people because it had no kavana for animals. It had no kavana, rather, for people. It had no kavana to attack animals and therefore it can't be considered moored either. For that matter, Tosfos says also, even if it killed other people in the presence of the owner, you need Edim. It's not just enough that the owner himself saw it, and therefore that's the Gemara didn't bring up that possibility either. So far we have a couple of possibilities. We can say, so far we have Rav Ashi's suggestion that we're talking about Shesikim the Shloshim and Adam, that it gored three people, healthy people so far, and it made them dangerously ill, but they're still alive. Then they all die, and then the animal goes and gores a fourth time. the other possibility. So that's the one possibility so far that stands. Each of the other ones that we mentioned, the Gemara seems to be slugging up. If it killed three behemoths, then we wouldn't necessarily say it's moored for people. If it killed three goyim, it's not necessarily moored for Jews. If it killed three treifas, it's not necessarily moored l'shalim. Now, the fact is that Rambam, in the event, does end up paskening like all of these possibilities, that yes, if it killed three behemoths, or three goyim, or three treifas, it would be considered a moor. Because yes, the Gemara is questioning that over here and saying, is it necessarily the case that moored la behemoth is moored la adam, and moored la goyim is moored for Jews, and so on and so forth. It's bringing up the question, but nevertheless, that question is not enough to, is not really enough to negate this possibility. So the Rambam does end up paskening in all these cases that yes, that those would all be valid examples of it becoming moored and therefore we could say in all those cases. Nevertheless, though, the fact is that there was no missus based in yet, because there's not going to be missus based in any of these cases where it killed animals or where it killed goyim, etc. So therefore we leave it at that, and we say that it's not going to have gotten missus based in, but nevertheless it is still considered a moor. In fact, the Magen Mishnah says over here that maybe the Rambam's text of the Gemara did not have the word Ella in each of these cases. And in that case, you can say, when the Gemara says, Mord la behema have a Mord la Adam, or Mord la Chavim have a Mord la Yisrael, and so forth, the Magen Mishnah explains there on the Rambam that the Rambam, instead of it, doesn't have the word Ella in his Gemara, and he's understanding these not as challenges to each one of them, but rather as statements. So, for example, Rav Zvida saying, for example, killed three animals, and as a statement, moored la behema have a moored la adam. Yes, an animal that is moored to kill animals is automatically also moored as far as people, which would contradict what we learned at the beginning of the Masechta, but fine, apparently the Rambam is not bothered by that. Similarly, Rav Shimi's suggestion, Rav Shimi would be saying, according to the Rambam, a factual statement. Yes, a moored for goyim is moored for Jews, and so forth. Anyway, Ella Amar Papa. So the Papa says, here's another possibility. The cut of Orach La'agma. Each time the animal killed a person, and there were Edim, and yes, we should have given the animal skilla, but each time it ran away to the meadow, and they weren't able to get a hold of it. So then, in the end, if it does that three times, each time there were Edim, and each time there was a warning in Beiskin, therefore now it becomes a moored, and now if a fourth time it does that, and we catch it, then we're going to give it skilla. And then the owner is going to be paying kofer. Rav Acha Breder of Ikka, I'm a conventional Huzmu Zomime Zomim. Rav Acha Breder of Ikka finds another example. Suppose that the Edom Zomimin themselves were shown to be Edom Zomimin. Meaning, in other words, so what happened is, you had the first time the animal gored, and the second time you had the first time the animal gored, Reuven and Shimon came to Beis Din and testified about it. The second time Levi and Yehuda came to testify. Now what happened is, after that, two other Edom, we'll call them Moshe and Aaron, came and were mazim. And they said, as far as all four of you, Reuven, Shimon, Levi, and Yehuda, all of you, Imanu Hayisem, you were with us at a different time when you're claiming that these respective gorings took place. Now what happens is, comes the third time around, so now Edom come to testify, about that goring, Rashi says the third time, it's supposed to be the fourth time, but whatever, anyway. So now what happens is that now a different group of Edom comes and says about Moshe and Aaron, actually, you guys are the Edom Zemimin, because you, Imanu Yisim, you were with us in a different place at the time when you claim that Reuven, Shimon, Levi, and Yehuda were with you in some other place. So now what happens is that restores Reuven, Shimon, Levi, and Yehuda's testimony. Now we say Moshe and Aaron are going to get punished with Vasis and Lekash Zamam. They're going to be paying whatever monetary penalty is involved over here. But meanwhile, we reinstated Reuven's and Shimon's eders and Levi's and Yehuda's eders. And for the third goring as well, we have Yisachar and Zvolun's eders. So fine. Now we have, up until now, we thought that all those eders were live because Moshe and Aaron had come in and mazin them. Now we discover that actually all those three eders were valid, and therefore now we're saying retroactively, if we had known that at the time, yes, we would have given skila to the animal on the basis of one of the earlier Edusin. But now we only know that now, once Moshe and Aaron themselves have been shown to be Edim Zemimin after they themselves tried to make Reuven and so forth Edim Zemimin. So that would be another example where the animal is able to become moored without already having been given skila as a tam. Well, the Gemara says that's not so simple. That works out if we say that the purpose of the three warnings and why it has to be on three different days is because we need to know that this ox is dangerous. So in that case, Shapir. So then good. Now that this happened, then we know that, all this time the animal was dangerous and therefore now we have a reason. Now when it does it the fourth time, then already it's a moor. But if the purpose of it is, so in other words, would it be enough? We said in that Gemara in the second parak, the Yehudi Torah Ba'inan would mean it's enough to have one Eidos that the ox gored three times on three different days. We had the opinion of a mayor there that said that even if it's only on one day, it becomes a moor. The Chum disagreed. But we said, if we say the Yehudi Torah, then it's enough to say that Edim can come on Tuesday and say that the animal gored on Sunday and on Monday and on Tuesday. And that would be enough to make it a moor. So if you say that, then fine, that's what you have over here. Because in effect, what you have over here is Reuven's, the edus of the Edim from Reuven through Yisachar was all in a state of suspense. We thought that it was a no good edus because of the Zomimin. Now it turns out the Zomimin themselves are Zomimin. So therefore that reinstates their edus. So for practical purposes, it's as if all three sets of Edom had testified on one day. And if we're saying that that's enough to make it a moor, then good. Ela Elia Uda Gabra Beinim. But if you say the purpose of the warnings is to warn the person, and therefore it needs separate warnings on different days, well, Meimer Omale, why can't the owner say, look, Loi Hava Yadina? I didn't know, because up until now, the Edom were considered to be Zomimin, and therefore, as far as I knew, their Edos is not valid, and therefore I had no particular reason to think that my animal is dangerous. So now you're telling me all of a sudden that at one fell swoop, all three of those sets of Edom are kosher after all. Fine, but I didn't know that until now. So according to that way of looking at it, then why should the animal be considered a moor? And the answer is, going to Amri, because we can say that the case is where the last set of Edom that came and were mazim, the original Zomimin, they also say, Kol Amos, Tekoto, Torah, Gabe, Habakoi, you should know every time this animal killed, you, the owner, were over there and you actually saw it, so therefore you don't have any claim anymore that you didn't know that this animal was goring. Now, of course, it's true you need the Edus, but the point is that once we have the Edus, and now we know that the original Edus was valid, so now he doesn't have an excuse anymore, even according to the way of looking at it, Le'ode Gabra, to say that I didn't know, because the fact is he was present when those original Edim were, he was present when the goings happened, and therefore he knew to begin with, fine, it may be that those original Edim were declared to be Zomimin, and as far as he's, now we keep in mind, with Edim Zomimin, it doesn't mean that the new Edim are saying it didn't happen. They're just saying maybe it happened, maybe it didn't, that's not our concern, but you couldn't have been Edus on it because you were elsewhere. So now he himself, the Balabas, was there. He knows perfectly well that these goings took place, so therefore, the excuse that they were Edom Zomimin is not going to wash. So we know that he knows that this animal had gored, and because he was there at the time, so therefore now all we need is that the Edom themselves, their reliability has been in question because they were found to be Zomimin. Well, now it turns out they're not Zomimin anymore, then that reinstates the fact that he knew all along that it's dangerous, and therefore he should be having to pay kosher. Okay. The Gemara says here is so that's another way of understanding the case where the animal became a moor without already having been killed as a tam. So the Gemara continues. Ravina Omar. Ravina says, here's another way of answering. The makirinus bala shur, the ain makirinus ashur. You could have a case where the edim know who the owner of this animal is, but they don't recognize the individual animal itself. So they're saying, so every time they say that Reuven's animal gored, but they couldn't give it skila because they didn't know particularly which one it was. Now, Rashi learns that we're talking about at the end, finally, when it happened the fourth time, they recognize, hey, you know what, this is in fact the same one that did it the first three times. On the other hand, the Rambam says that you don't even need that, even if they don't recognize the particular shur, still, once it comes the fourth time, the owner is already paying kofer because, as the Gemara is going to go on to say over here, he knows there's a dangerous animal in his herd. So that's what Gemara asks. My havelei l'mevad. What is the owner supposed to do if he doesn't know which animal it is? How is he supposed to watch it? And the answer is mishum da'amri. We tell him exactly that. Tura nagchona isloch b'bakroch. You have among your herd an animal that's known to be dangerous, that's known to gore. Iboiloch naturi kol b'bakroch. So you are responsible to guard all of your animals. And if you don't, then yes, eventually we may not be able to execute the animal unless we actually recognize it, but we can still put you on the hook for koifer because you're being careless and you know that there's a dangerous animal over there and you've been warned and based in and you're not taking care of it. Okay, so we have a bunch of different possibilities of how an animal can become a moored without already having been killed as a cow. Next, we said in the mission of a zebezeh chayovin misahola, we said either way, whether the animal is a tam or a moored, either way it's chayiv misa. And now the pasuk says, when it talks about the animal being chayiv misa, the expression is sokol yisokol asher, the animal should be given skila, v'lo ye'ochol as b'sorei, and its flesh shall not be eaten. So now let's analyze that. We learned this a couple of months ago in Kiddushin as well. Once the pasuk says the ox is given skila, any yadesh in nevelahi or nevela sort of achila, automatically that means the animal is nevela, and we know already you're not allowed to eat nevela. So what is the Torah adding by saying that you can't eat its meat? So magid l'chakosik means the pasuk is teaching you she'im shochte l'acha she'nigma dinay, if the owner were to shech the animal after the Gemar Din, after Beis Din has already decided that it is Chayiv Misa, and now he would have taken and shecht it rather than waiting until it actually gets Skila, then nevertheless, also Ba'achila, it's still also to eat. So in other words, Soko Yisoko Lasher, and once it was decided that it's going to get Skila, then V'lo Ya'ochol Sopsore, then you're not allowed to eat the meat even if you shecht it. Continues the Braisa, Ein li ela ba'achila. Now, so far, you would only know you're not allowed to eat it. Ba'anah minayin. How do we know you're also not allowed to have hanah from it? Tamad lema uvala shor noki. The pasuk continues, the owner of the shor is clean. Now, on the simple meaning of the pasuk, it means something like that even though by a moored we're saying he should be chayiv misa b'dei shamayim, and instead he has to pay a kofer, by tam, we don't say that. We say he's noki. We say that he's cleansed of any responsibility to pay a kofer. But here we're doushening it to mean that it's also b'hanah. So my mashma, where do we get from the word noki that it means that it's also b'hanah? Shimon ben Zoma Omer, ka odom sha'omer l'chaveri. In fact, a popular expression, yotze ish poini noki min nechosav, this poini has gone out clean from his nechosim, ve'im lebehem anah shal klum, and he has no anah from them. Like in English, you say a person was cleaned out. So the same way with you, Valashur Noki is meant to represent for us that the owner of the shur is clean, is cleaned out of having any hana from this asset, from this shur that he used to own. Okay, thus far the Braisa. So now let's analyze it. How do you know though that this what was the Braisa saying? That once the animal is given skila, obviously you can't eat the meat, so therefore v'lo ya'ochlos p'sorei is teaching us that you're not even allowed to shecht it before that and eat it. But how do we know? Umimai v'lo ya'ochlos p'sorei v'hecha d'shochte achash nigma dinoi sh'osu b'achila. How do we know that those words v'lo ya'ochlos p'sorei are teaching us about this case where you shechted it after Gmar Din and saying that it's also to eat? Maybe you should say, maybe in fact if you were to shecht it after the Gmar Din, then it would be mutter to eat it. So maybe the loyach sorry is indeed telling us about after skila. You're saying after skila, there's no need to because of course you can't eat it. You would say also bahanavu. Maybe that point is telling us that it's also bahanav. In other words, that the loya ochas psare is not telling us about eating at all, but rather strictly about hanah. Eating, of course, you can't eat it anyway because nevela. But the point is that the word loya ochal would mean strictly that you can't have hanah. And that would be, kedar babahu, like the way that babahu understands. Anytime the Torah says about something, you can't eat lo yoichal, you can't eat it, or lo soichal, you should not eat it, or lo soichlu, or you plural should not eat it, or for that matter, lo yeochal and passive, whatever. Anytime it says an expression in the Torah, you're not allowed to eat something, echad isur achila, echad isur hanah b'mashma, automatically it includes an isur achila, it also includes an isur hanah, ad shi'ifarat l'cha kosu kader shaparat l'cha b'neveva, unless the Torah specifies otherwise the way it does by Nevela. By Nevela, the Torah clearly tells us you're not allowed to eat Nevela, but you are allowed to sell it to a goy, to an Oven of the Zara, or to give it to a Ger Toshav. And you have a discussion in the Gemara in Pesachim whether that means could you do the other way around, could you sell it to a Ger Toshav or give it as a gift to a goy, Oven of the Zara, whatever. The point is that you're allowed to have some kind of hanah from it. The Torah clearly says so. So therefore, you could say the same thing over here, that veloye ochos psore means don't have hanah from it. The context where Rabbi Bohu originally said that is in Pesachim, was the discussion of how we know that chometz for Pesach is also b'hanah. Because again, the Torah never says in so many words, don't have hanah, it says lo yeochol chometz, and so Rabbi Bohu is learning from that it means that it includes isur hanah as well. You have the opinion of Chizkiah there that says different, that learns it differently. Rashi, in fact, in Pesachim points out here the question really would be even according to Chizkiah, because after all here it says loya ochos psaroi, and there's more reason to say that means an isur hanah. The fact is Tosfos says the Gemara didn't even really need to bring Rav Abahu's statement. Either way, if we assume that loya ochos psaroi is talking about after skila, necessarily it has to be referring to hanah, because obviously achila you can't do anymore. So the Maharam Shif says that if we didn't have Rav Abahu's statement, we would have no reason to think that loya ochol refers to an isra hanah. So we need Rav Abahu's statement in the Gemara. But the point is, how do we know that that's not what it means? How do we know that it means to aser the animal to be eaten, even if you shecht it after gemar din? That with a ger you give it with a ger toshav you give the nevela to him, and a goy you sell it to. So there the Torah is clearly saying that you're allowed to have hanah from it, but in other cases Rav Abahu is saying that not. Anyway, so the point is, again, so maybe we should say that that's what the loya ochol as psore means over here. Not to aser it to eat if you shechted it after gmar din, but only to aser it b'hanah after skila was done. So the Gemara says, Amri, so they answered, Hani mili, heich denofik le isra achila, the isra hanah, mikro de loya ochol. Because the difference is, sure, if you have the word lo yoichal or lo yoochol or whatever, is going to teach us both an isra achila and an isra hanah, then you can say that the loya ochol includes both of them. Aval hocha, but over here the isra achilim is soko yisoko nafka. Here, after all, even according to you, the machshin, you're agreeing that the fact that you can't eat it, you're learning from the fact that it's being given skila. So therefore, isak, and therefore even you are agreeing that the word loya ochol means maximum isra hana. Well then, if you're going to tell me then that this loya ochol meant only an isra hanah and it can't mean an isra achila because we're talking after skila, well then nichter rachmana loya hana. Then the Torah should have said clearly, don't have hanah. It's one thing, in other words, when we don't know yet without the Torah telling us that something is also to eat or to have hanah from, then it can use the word loya ochol to refer to both of them. But here we already know the isra achila from the fact that it's given skila, so the Torah should have just said lo yahona to mean that you can't have hana inami, or another way of explaining it, or another way of saying it could have said just lo yaho, it could have just said don't eat. Es v'sore lomali, why does it have to include the words es v'sore, it's flesh? So it means the afagav, the abdik, ke'in basar. So it means even though you made it into actual, into regular meat by shechting it, the shechte, so you actually shechted it, nevertheless, also, it would still be also to eat. So therefore, so yes, we can learn that it means that it's also even if you shechted it after Gmar Din. There is going to be, by the way, worth mentioning, we're going to have later on in the Perek where there's the opinion of Rabbi Natan, who learns that the animal is not osir while it's still alive, meaning, in other words, he says, for example, you'd be allowed to plow with it even after Gmar Din, you're just not allowed to, as we're saying over here, shecht it and eat it. But that's what we're saying over here, that once you shecht it, then it would still, because it was after Gmar Din, it would still be osir b'hana. However, the Gemara says, maskif la mazutra. However, mazutra says, I have a question on that. So you're telling me that this is where you're learning that the animal is also ba'achila, even if you shechted it after Gmar Din. But after all, the Torah is telling us the animal requires skila. And skila is done, part of the process of skila is throwing rocks on it. So therefore, so Mazutra says, maskif la mazutra, emahani mili, you know what, maybe the Torah is implying, when is it also to eat? Hecha de bodak tzur v'shochat roi. If a person took a rock, and checked it to make sure that it's sharp and smooth, and then checked it in it, the avde ke'in skila, where then, in effect, he did something that is a semblance of skila, so then you would say, maybe that's when the Torah is implying that the animal is also to eat. Adol hecha the shaft of a sakin loy. Maybe when he shechted it with a regular knife, then it wouldn't be also to eat in the first place. Maybe the Torah is telling us, soku yisakal asher, lo yo'ochal asbzare, not only if the animal is stoned, then you can't eat it, obviously, because it's nevela, but if it was killed in any way using a stone, including where it was shechted with a stone, then it's also to eat, but not if it was shechted with a metal knife. So like Mara says, Amri, So they answered back in the yeshiva, otu sakin ksiva baraisa. Does it actually say the word knife anywhere in the Torah? There's no advantage in halacha to using one over the other. V'hatnan, we learn in a Mishnah in Cholin. Hashoche b'mago yod, if a person shechts using a hand sickle, which is a tool that has the blade is double edged, one edge is smooth, the other edge is serrated. So if you use a smooth edge, then it's allowed. The mago yad, but sir, if he uses a sharpened stone, or a kone, or a reed, or a sharpened piece of wood, shchitasik shere, in all those cases, the shchita is kosher. So therefore, yes, there's no difference in halacha between shechting with a knife and shechting with a rock. So therefore, so there's no reason to think that the Torah is telling us that there should be a difference in halacha between whether the animal was shechted in one way or the other. Either way, the shechita is going to be equally kosher. Now, Tosfos points out the truth is the Gemara does mention that the Gemara does mention in Cholin that some of the ones we're mentioning over here you're not supposed to do lahatchila. But the Mishnah at least is implying maybe the word hashoichet is only b'diavad, but there is in fact a braisa there in Cholin that says you're allowed to use these lachatchila. So there can't really be a difference between how it was shechted with a knife or with a sharpened rock, such that you would say that there's a difference in halacha, that the Torah is implying there's a difference in halacha as far as eating it or not eating it. So the Gemara says, "V'hashde v'naftele isra achila v'isra anam lo yo'ochal b'sorei." Well, once we're saying, according to Rabbi Bohu, that we're learning both that it's also ba'achila and that it's also ba'hana, we're learning from lo yo'ochal b'sorei. So then, ba'al asher noki lomali. What do we need the pasuk? Well, ba'al asher noki, which before we said noki meant that he's noki min achosav, that he's cleaned out and has no hana from this possession. So what do we need that for? So the Gemara answers, "V'hanas oirei." That we need in order to tell us that he's also to have anah from the skin. The safed ad chamina. Otherwise, you would think the sorei who also anah abo oire nishri b'anah. Maybe only the flesh is also b'anah, but the skin is mutter. After all, the Torah is using the expression lo yeochel, which means you can't eat it. So maybe then the skin, which can't be eaten, would be mutter in the first place. So therefore, Kamashmal and Bala Shonoki, therefore the Torah needs to add the words Bala Shonoki, meaning that he's also to have Hana from the skin as well. So the Gemara says, Olahanach Tanoi de Makila Lahai Bala Shonoki Lidrosha Achrita. Now, we're going to have Tanoim for Deuteronomy and the next piece and the next piece that are going to learn that the word Noki, actually we learn a different din from it. Not that it's also about, they learn a different din as far as Tzatzi Kofer and things like that. So according to those Tanoim, so could be in the Lameima Kamon, as we're going to say later on, as the Gemara is going to continue to say over here. So then, Hanas Odom, Manolahu, where are they learning that the owner is also to have Hana from the skin? They can't learn it from the word Noki because they're already using that for a different Drasha. So the answer is Nakalahuma Es Besari. They learn it from the word Es, where because Es means Es Atofel of Sari, means the thing that is secondary to, that's auxiliary to the skin, or my new Odo, namely the skin of the animal. So they can learn it that way. So they would say that. So they can learn the entire Isra Hana just from the words Lo Yochol Es Besarei. Lo Yochol means Isra Achila and Isra Hana, like Rabbi Bahu said. Es includes the skin as well. And there you go. And therefore they have the words Vala Shonoki available for a different Darasha. So the Gemara says V'Hai Tana Es LeDarish. Now on the other hand, the Braisa that we quoted before that says that we have to use a Vala Shonoki to say that he's also Vahana even in the skin. That Tana es loy darish. That Tana does not darshan the word es to include such things. Kedetanya, as exactly learned in a brisa. Shimon ham suni va'amilon chemya ham suni hoya darish kol es in Shabbat Torah. Shimon ham suni, he could be called that because that was the name of the place he came from, whatever. So Shimon ham suni, or some say chemya ham suni, was darshaning all the es in the Torah. Every time the Torah says es. Which in the simple sense, it doesn't necessarily have any meaning. It just makes that the next word after it is the object of the sentence. He would say that we learned something from it, something extra. For example, Bereshis Bara Elokim, Es HaShemayim, the Es HaAretz means Hashem didn't just create the heavens and the earth, he created everything that's in the heavens and everything that's in the earth. And so forth. And he's going through the whole Torah that way. When he reached the Pasuk Es HaShem HaKechatira in Parshas Vayeshanan, Pirush, so then he held back from it, and he said, you know what, you can't say that, you can't possibly compare anything else to, so Rashi says he didn't know what to be married with. You can't be, there's nothing that you can say that you should fear on an equal level with Hashem. So therefore he held back, and he said, not only this, not only here, you can't darshan, but if here, it's clear that you have a word S. That is not meant for a Darasha, then it's clear that all the previous S in the Torah are also like that. Tosfos points out that the Gemara could have said that he could have said, for example, that it means like we learned in Kedushin that Hashem is saying that Moda Av Aim are equal to Moda Shemayim, but he says you already have a pasuk for that Ishim Ev Ovet Tiro Veshav Soset Ishmodo, and therefore we know from that Hashem is comparing Moda Av Aim to Moda Shemayim because you have Es Ishim Ev Ovet Tiro and Es Hashem Alakei Chatira, so he didn't want to say that here the word S is adding a second S on top of that. Different Mephoshim talk about, we discussed some of this in Kedushin, why he wasn't bothered by earlier Psukim, for example, V'ahavta Es Hashem Alekecha, so fine, he had no problem saying, for example, that means that you should love Tamar Chachamim on a par with Hashem. But here he's saying, as far as Yira, he didn't want to say that. He didn't want to say that Yira, how could you possibly have Yira for anything on a par with Hashem? So therefore, he held back and he said, all of the drushes that I said so far I'm rejecting them, I'm invalidating them, and I'm saying that there's nothing you can doubt from them. So Amrulay Tamidim, so Shimon or Nechemias Tamidim asked him, Rebbe, call Essen Chedarashka, Matei Alein. What's going to be with all those Essen? What's going to be? You spent so long doing drushes on all those Essen. What's going to happen with them now? Amrulay. So he answers them, Kishem Shikibalti Schar ala Prisha, Kishem Shikibalti Schar ala Drisha, Kishibalti Schar ala Prisha, the same way as I received reward from Hashem up until now for the Daushening, now I'll also receive reward from Hashem for holding back. Because, in other words, Marshall explains, up until now I was Daushening, and that was meant to be for the honor of the Torah, to show that there's not a single word in the Torah that's extra. Now I'm doing it for the honor of Hashem, because I want to say that there's nothing that you can have, murder for on a par with Hashem. So therefore, I'm still doing it for the covet of Hashem. Ad Shabbat of Akiva Valimit and Torah of Akiva came and Darshan and explained that no, Es Hashem Alekechatira, we can also Darshan that it means to add something. Es Hashem Alekechatira, L'Rabbis Tamar HaChamim, it comes to include that you should have Mora Rabbah, Kamora Shemayim, like it says in Pirkei Avos. So it means that you should have respect for your Rebbe on a par that you have with Hashem. So therefore, Rabbi Akiva doubting it that way. So therefore, according to him, you are able to continue doubting S's. But according to Shimon Hamsuni or Nehemiah Hamsuni, did not agree with that. And therefore, therefore he says you can't douch in anything from S. So according to him, you can't douch in from S Besare to learn the skin, and therefore he has to learn from Vala Shor Naki that the owner is also to have Hana from the skin. By the way, I mean, you know, we've mentioned this before. I mean, you can see the tremendous integrity, the Avasa Emes that Shimon or Nehemiah had here. You know, how easy would it have been for him to say, good, you know, Rabbi Akiva gave his drasha, L'Rabbis Tamar HaChamim, good, then let me continue where I left off and continue gouging the rest of them. And instead he's saying, no, the fact is, I can't accept that Mora Rabbah should be on such a high level as to be tantamount to Mora Shemayim, and therefore I still have to say that all this work that I put into all this time on the S's, I'm going to reject it, and I'm going to say that we don't douch in them after all, rather than just accepting Rabbi Akiva's drasha and using it as a crutch. Tosfos, by the way, points out that anyway, you have the pasuk we learned in Kedushin. We have the whole sugya about standing up in honor of Tamar HaChamim and old people and so forth. And we said, you know, we learned from Pnei Seva talking about Dar to Pnei Zakin that you have to have respect for Tamar HaChamim. So here we're talking about Rabbi Muvhak. Here we're talking about your primary Rebbe or Rav Muflag, a particularly distinguished Tamar HaChamim. We're there. The Mora for them has to be on a whole different level. And Rabbi Akiva is saying it has to be on the level of Mora Shemayim. So we'll continue tomorrow, Best Hashem, and we'll continue going back to this matter of koifer and other things that apply when a shur kills a person. We'll get into all of that tomorrow. We'll get into all of that over the next couple of days. That'll take us almost to the end of the parak.